the beginning of my journey in non-monogamy was actually accepting my sort of sexual curiosity and my sexual, like my desires for sexual variety and adventure. I thought, what if this is really part of me? What if this is not a sickness or a phase or something that I have to fix?
Hi, and welcome to Middle Me, the podcast about living your best, most pleasurable life after 40. I'm your host, Anna P. Santos. In this episode, we're again talking to Deepa Paul, a Filipino-Indian writer based in Amsterdam. The last time we talked to Deepa, she gave us a peek at her open marriage, which she also writes about in her memoir entitled Ask Me How It Works: Everything You Want to Know About My Open Marriage. Well, guess what? I can say this since Deepa also announced it on her social media platforms. Are you ready for it? Deepa has gotten a book deal. Yep. Deepa's memoir will be coming out in spring 2025. A book about open marriage, written by a woman of color. I'm totally doing a happy dance. I had the privilege of reading Deepa's early manuscript, and I won't say anything more, but I can tell you that you Filipino listeners will see yourself in that book. In this episode of Middle Me, Deepa takes us to dinners with polyamorous women, lets us in on how she shed off shame as she explored her sexually adventurous side, and how in her Middle Me stage, she sees desire as another part of her identity, an identity that also includes being a wife and a mother. Here's my Middle Me conversation with Deepa Paul. You set up a dinner for polyamorous women. Now,
Women, yes. So how that works is I am an official host for this platform called End the Table, which is the concept is it's a dinner party with six women that you don't know, and it's all hosted at home. So I started hosting for this because I was like, I wanted to talk about like kind of spicy things with women, and every dinner has a different theme. So for my first dinner, I was like, okay, I want to see if there are other polyamorous women like me in Amsterdam. And then I thought, I think I got six applications to be in that dinner, and I could only take on five plus myself. So we were six. And each of us was doing a different kind of like setup from everyone else. Like there was someone who was monogamish with her husband. So what they would do is like they would go to sex parties together, and then they can play with each other, with other people there, but nowhere else. And then, I had my setup with my husband and my boyfriend. I have another friend who considers another person who was there, who's my friend, considers herself a relationship anarchist, which means there's no hierarchy. So like in my marriage, my husband is the priority. And anything that I like, any time and energy and effort I spend on my boyfriend is secondary to that, which is accepted on by all three of us. But in her form of non-monogamy, there's no priority. Like I've been living with you for 9 years, but you are not higher on the pecking order than my new boyfriend of 2 weeks. And I was like, wow, that's wild. And then there was another woman at that dinner who was the girlfriend of a couple.
The girlfriend of a couple. So she is
So she was the third.
both. Effectively, she's like the partner of both, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So
Okay.
I was like, wow, this is just, oh, sorry. This is just such a spectrum. Like, there is no one way to do it, and you really have to figure out what works for you. I also have another group of polyamorous moms, by the way.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah, we are
That's why.
seven. We're seven because moms have really different concerns. Like, the single girlies can be like, if they want to, stay for a weekend with someone new, they can. But moms have so much more like boundaries on our time and our energy. So, I don't know. I'm lucky enough that my best friend is also in an open relationship. We're very similar. We call each other the same person in two bodies. But then over as I've become more open. As I've become more open about my open marriage on Instagram and events and stuff, people come to me and they're like, hey, you know, I'm also a mom. Like, how do you do this with your kids?
Yeah.
And then at some,
your kids.
At some point, I was just like, you know what, let's just all have wine together so we can talk about it, because I'm sure you can learn something else from all of these other women that I've collected. And, you know, we've had a bunch of gatherings now. It's all super, always super fun.
But when you talk to the moms and then to the single girls, okay, I know like there's probably the basic, I can imagine, basic difference would be the single girls would have more time, more free time, more energy. But what about the moms? What have you seen as the concerns or the things that they manage, that you have to manage as a polyamorous mom?
I think it falls under the umbrella of how do we protect our children first and foremost? Like, if you're having a, you know, all of these different women have, again, like different ways that they exercise, like they practice polyamory or non-monogamy. Some people have casual partners. Some people are dating two people or three people. Like, how do you protect your child? Okay. Like, how do you manage the truth of what you do with them at an age appropriate level? So we have like one, you know, two moms who have special needs kids. We have one who's a stepmom. Most of us have pretty young children, like under the age of 10. So it's all figuring out like, how do we explain this to our children in an age appropriate way, which you have to do with pretty much anything, right? Like you have to explain death in a, you know, an age appropriate way, grief in a age appropriate way. So how do we expect, how do we explain the truth of our relationships to our children in a way that they can understand while they still feel safe and, you know, and taken care of and prioritized? I think that's the umbrella of concerns of polyamorous moms.
Is there an answer to that question already?
It really depends on your situation, but I can tell you what we do. Like, I can tell you what I do. So in the beginning, because when we started this 7 years ago, it was basically about casual connections. So being able to go on dates with people. And it was an activity for after bedtime. So after my daughter goes to sleep, I mean, you know how kids are, right? Like, she was 3 or 4 when we started. Nothing exists to them after they go to bed, right? Like, so, you know, I would go out and then I would come back, and then we drew up boundaries around the time that I would be back. Like, my husband was like, hey, I really want you to be back and in bed before our daughter wakes up. So, she doesn't see you like, you know, like puyat or like ngarag or something. And I'm like, yeah, okay, that's really reasonable. And because it wasn't part of her life, her daily life and our life as a family, there was nothing really to disclose.
Right.
I would just say, like, I rarely went out before she went to bed. But if I was going out, I would just say, okay, I'm going out for a drink. And then she'd be like, okay, bye, you know.
Yeah.
And that's that all changed during the pandemic. When I was becoming close to my boyfriend. So he was someone I was dating casually at the time. And we became close. Basically, my life during the pandemic was my family and him. Mm-hmm. And those were the only two places I went. And this was all, you know, with my husband's agreement as well. Like we were a bubble. Like, he and I were a bubble and my family and I were a bubble. And we had a curfew. So the curfew, I think, was 9 p.m., you know, all over Holland. Yeah. And, you know, I couldn't go out after bedtime. So I would go there before bedtime and I'd be like, okay, now I have to sleep over.
Right.
Otherwise, I don't get my night off. Right. So my daughter was 6 at the time and she'd already been doing sleepovers with her best friend. So she knew, she had a working understanding of what a sleepover was. She knew that it's something you do with a friend who you enjoy spending time with and it's fun. Yeah. So the first time I did it, I just said to her, okay, I'm going out. She was like, where are you going? I'm going to sleep over at Connor's house. And she was like, okay, have fun. And that was it. And nope. I came back like, yeah, no, like nothing. And, you know, and yeah, she was 6. I came back the next morning and she was like, did you have fun? And I was like, I did. I have a really strict belief that any kind of sexual content is not for children. I don't need to tell my daughter, my 6-year-old daughter, or my 7, 8, 9-year-old daughter, what I've been doing at night. Like, I'm an adult. My sex life is private. It's like when we try to unload concepts that are too, I mean, this is the whole outcry now with like books being banned and stuff like that, right? Like, people want to keep sexual content away from children. I'm like, yeah, I'm also doing that in my life. So at some point when she, I think the penny will drop for her, when she gets to an age where her development will just catch up, you know, she'll be like, oh, wait, you know, mom is sleeping over at Connor's house. Huh. And then she can ask me, and then I can talk to her about it. But there's no initiating it like, hey, now I have a boyfriend and this is what we do.
Right.
That, you know, that has no business in a child's life. And we've made an agreement that our family life is our family life, and my boyfriend's not involved in our family life. He knows my daughter and they've met, but to my daughter, he's one of the adults in my life. You know, I have my best friend, I have like people that she knows, and he's one of them.
I asked you like what the difference is between the single girls who are polyamorous.
Yeah.
But what are the similarities?
A lot of curiosity. A curiosity and a sense of adventure, I think. We all wanted to find out things, experience new things. My boyfriend used to call me, like early in our relationship, he used to call me a novelty junkie. He was like, you'll do anything just because you haven't done it. And I'm like, yeah. you know, I've changed a bit since then, but that's a huge motivation for me, like new experiences and I wanted to point out like one thing the polyamorous moms have in common. We said the tagline of our group is, I don't have time for this. Like relationship drama, I don't have time for this. You know, like it's just like we want everything to be efficient because our lives are super organized to make room for these things that, you know, bring us aliveness and pleasure. But yeah, with the single girlies and the polyamorous moms, curiosity is a huge red thread. Everyone tends to have a lot of stuff going on. Like, these are not people who will just stake their identity on one thing. Generally, like, the polyamorous moms will not see their children as their projects, their life projects. You know, they have, like, usually they're also working moms. They're used to having a lot of stuff going on. And then the single girlies also, whether or not they're extroverts or introverts, they have many interests. So I think you're probably predisposed to being non-monogamous if you have kind of those separations in you can compartmentalize and handle a lot of things. You have those compartments in your brain for a lot of new things and different things, and you're used to juggling stuff.
We're in middle me stage, right?
Yes.
That means that there was more of our life that we lived where we were taught we had to be this. Once you're a mother, you're supposed to stop being this. Once you're a wife, you're supposed to stop being this.
Mm-hmm.
When you talk about the similarities between the two groups of women, but that they're polyamorous.
Yeah.
It didn't come with any of that baggage of, or did it? You know, having to shed.
Yes, it did. Yeah. I had one dinner also where the topic was permission. And I realized a lot of women are socialized to be good girls. So it's giving yourself, at some point, I think it usually happens in your, what I've seen is it happens in your 30s. You get to the point where you're like, oh, but I want to be these other things other than what I've been taught I should be. And you're waiting for someone to give you permission. Your parents, your friends, your spouse, your partner, but actually the most important, and you may never get the permission of these people. The most important person who gives you permission to be these other things is yourself. Like, wow. I will allow myself to experience this. You know, the beginning of my journey in non-monogamy was actually accepting my sort of sexual curiosity and my sexual, like my desires for sexual variety and adventure. I thought, what if this is really part of me? Yeah. What if this is not a sickness or a phase or something that I have to fix?
Did you feel that?
And way? Something that, yeah, I did feel that way. Like, I mean, growing up, it was always like, oh, like I'm really, you know, I went to an all-girls Catholic school for the first 17 years of my life. And I was one of the very few girls who had a boyfriend at 15. And I was really like looked down on for it, but I was super happy. I mean, he was a great guy. You know, I mean, they call you malande, and then, yeah. And I, you know, and I was just like, yeah, but this is great. You know, while all of the other girls were having like their girl on girl things that they also had to keep hidden. You know, I had a boyfriend, and I was like, this is, you know, this is fantastic. There's nothing wrong with this. But I also was getting really like strong message from like everywhere around me, basically, that, hey, this is not good. And if you enjoy this and you enjoy what you're doing here, there's something not right about you.
It's even worse if you enjoy it. That's the message.
Yeah, it's even worse if you enjoy. I think that was also what people were reacting to. I was having a great time. And, you know, so yeah, going back to what you were saying, it's like, I did feel that I had to keep that under wraps. And especially when you are in a committed relationship and you get married, it's like, okay, well, this is it. You know, your sexual days of sexual curiosity or whatever are over. And I'm like, wait, I'm from the Philippines. They haven't even started. You know, like we weren't dating. We weren't sleeping around. We weren't going to festivals and taking ecstasy. We were getting good grades. Wow. You know, we were trying to graduate early and
get
start
to work.
Earning. So we get to work so we could help our families. I'm like, wait, I didn't have those years yet and I want them. And if you kind of travel out of the box of that Filipino culture, you see, hey, so many other places in the world are, you know, allow that.
Yeah.
Have, you know, a lot of people have these carefree years and they become functioning, successful adults after they've had their years of fun. And I'm now like, okay, but I would also like to experience those. Yeah, and I guess I did. I have. I still am.
Yeah, it doesn't end, right? It doesn't end.
No.
This curiosity about who you are and the many people that you can be throughout life.
Absolutely. I hope it never ends, because I think stagnation, people who get stuck, yeah, I don't know. I think people who get stuck miss out on a lot. And I would like not to get stuck. I'm a water element. I'm a water sign. So I want to keep flowing and changing with the core, the path. As the path changes, I will flow along with it.
But did you ever imagine that this is what your life would be like in your 40s? You have a boyfriend.
No. Oh my God. No, never.
Daughter, I have met your daughter. You have a beautiful home in the one nicest places in Amsterdam. I mean, did you ever imagine your life to be like this? Or yeah, when they sold you the fairy tale, did you ever think that your fairy tale could look like this?
I never imagined. Actually, even if you asked me like as far, you know, as recently back as like 7-8 years ago, but no, we started 7 years ago. 10 years ago, if you'd asked me that this would be the situation, I would not have expected it. It was always my dream to live in Europe. So I was already working towards that when I was in college and my first jobs. So that I'm like, yes, okay, it happened. But the way that it looks now with, yeah, having my husband, having my boyfriend, and also just like a huge sort of, I've been in Amsterdam now for 12 years. I have a really big network. You know, we have a life that's really simple. And well, we were just talking about this, you know, earlier before we started recording. I've never owned a car. We've never owned a car. And our apartment is like 85 square meters. And we don't own the land that it's on. We pay rent to the city of Amsterdam for the land that our apartment is built on, which is really fucked up. But I don't have a lot of the things that, you know, people back home would say, this is how I've made it. But the life that I have now it's one that I worked hard for over many tough conversations, many learnings, many mistakes, trial and error. And the life I have now is something that I designed that's really working. And sometimes it still surprises me. It really surprises me. Like, so my husband likes to cook, and he's done like a few Filipino pop-ups over the course of the last year, in addition to his corporate job. And at his first pop-up, he realized that he really needed someone to do, like, to handle the drinks orders, because he couldn't cook and serve, you know, the food and handle drinks at the same time. And my boyfriend used to work at an Irish bar. So he said, why didn't Marlon ask me? And I was like, well, I don't think he realized that he could ask you. So the second time the pop-up happened, Marlon's like, hey, do you want to be our bartender for the night? And, you know, my boyfriend loves being included in stuff. And he was like, yeah, sure. And so the night of the pop-up, my husband had two really close friends of his helping him cook. So they were prepping, they were setting up, and then Connor walked in with all of, like, the ice and the coolers and stuff like that for drinks. And the friends were like, what's he doing here? Like, he's the bartender. Really? Like, are you okay with that? Yeah, I asked him to be here, you know? So, like these kinds of things, when I see them, yeah, I just pinch myself, like, what? What's going on? This is really happening? Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Coming up next, Deepa tells us more about her upcoming memoir, Ask Me How It Works, Everything You Want to Know About My Open Marriage. She also gets personal about the evolution of her own marriage and how the raw honesty and clear communication required by an open relationship actually strengthened her bond with her husband.
I've read excerpts of your book. You've trusted me with that. I know the place that Marlon occupies in your life.
Yeah.
Did you ever feel that you were going to lose him?
Did I ever feel like I was going to lose Marlon? It definitely felt touch and go at certain times. And then it was more like becoming aware that, oh, this is hard. Like, this is hard for us. This is hard for him. You know how when you're so in sync with someone on everything, and then when you're not in sync in something, it feels awful. That's how it feels when Marlon and I are not on the same page about something. And we tend to resolve things super quickly because it just feels terrible not to be, like, super aligned on everything.
Yeah.
So when we've had our moments of jealousy and conflict and tension and fear, it just feels like, oh my God, this is really hard. Why am I doing this? And then we find our way through because we're really committed to working things out together, because it just feels better when we're on the same, like, page about almost everything. I've never felt like I could lose him. I've definitely never felt like I could lose him to another person. Like, I'm very, very aware that what we have is really unique and really special. And to be fair, part of my confidence also comes from recognizing what I bring to the table as his life partner.
Yeah.
So I've never felt like I could lose him. I have felt at times where he's just like, can we just not do this open part anymore? But then those feelings pass. And then usually it means we've also created our relationship in a way that he can speak up for what he feels in the moment. Like, if something is lacking, like, oh, I feel like you don't spend enough time with me, or I feel like you've been spending a lot of time with Connor, or I feel like you're excited about stuff you're doing with Connor, but not with me. And then when he says that, I'm like, ah, okay, then it's easy for me to course correct. And then I'll be like, ah, okay, what we actually need is, like, date nights together. Or I need to say to Connor, like, hey, can you not call me tonight? Because, you know, I want to go for, like, a swim with Marlon and I won't be reachable. So I think one of those things is, yeah, one of the things that we really got out of this is anyone can say what they need at any stage.
You know, that's super rare.
And I think especially for men, like they don't want to ask for stuff. They're just like, rah, rah. No, I'm generalizing, but it's, I think it's been especially hard for men to admit vulnerability. And
monogamous relationships that are, you know, our convention of what is safe and secure because you're the only one. Oh, that bad, right? That's the convention. Oh. It's already difficult to have these conversations with such openness. But what I hear you saying is because you have an open relationship and it's the honesty is there about the place that these two people occupy in your life, mm-hmm. that flows into other parts of difficult conversations that have to be had.
Absolutely. I think we started with, because when, you know, you're in an uncomfortable situation because you're not operating by the rules that everybody else is, you know, you don't have the same expectations. Jealousy is really uncomfortable. I mean, to put it mildly, it's really uncomfortable. So you have to kind of look at what's making, like, why am I so upset about this? What's really upsetting for me? Oh, is that the fear that, you know, Marlon had this fear of, like, when I first started becoming close to my boyfriend, I said, you know that I'll, you know, I'll never leave you. And like, this is, we're partners for life. And he said, yeah, actually what's the fear is you feel that now, but in 3 years, we won't know. Maybe you've outgrown me. We can't say anything about the future. And he said, you feel that way about me now, but I can't guarantee. How can we guarantee that that's forever? And then I was like, you know what? That's valid. Like, that's valid because we can't say how this will go and how we'll feel in the future. But now that I know that you're afraid of that, then I can work harder to make sure that I don't outgrow our relationship, that we always have something, you know, exciting and fun and something that binds us together other than laundry and household tasks and parenting. So when you, I think when you're able to talk about these things, your fears, and be seen by your partner, yeah, for not just all the great things about you, but also for your insecurities and your fears, you're able to respond to each other in a way that is really deeply reassuring, and you get to know yourself so much more. And then when Marlon says to me, I feel like I haven't spent enough time with you this week, it's such a clear request. Like, how can you say no?
Yeah.
You know, how can I say it? And like when he says, I miss you because you've been away a lot. And I'm like, yeah, okay, now I'm gonna, you know, plan all our like date nights and do stuff. Like there's you need space in the relationship, but then you also need to be able to say to each other, hey, I need this from you. Could you give me that?
The way that you talk about how Marlon says it, it comes across as non-accusatory, non-guilt-tripping, non-like.
Oh, it's like that now.
Okay.
No, it wasn't. It's
learn.
Like training him to take the perfect picture of me for Instagram. This was the work of years. So in the beginning, I think,
yeah,
you know, he was really uncomfortable with me going on dates. So the way he responded was by withdrawing affection. Mm-hmm. Like, he'll be distant. And I hated it because, like, I needed to feel like, hey, we're still in this together. I still love you. Like, you know, nothing has changed between us. But actually what he wanted to say was, you know, I really missed you when you were out.
Yeah.
And it's just like we're not taught to express those things. I really missed you when you were out. Like, oh, I was actually lonely. And then he also started realizing that he couldn't rely on me to fulfill all those needs. So when he's lonely, I think he'll invite friends over, you know, he'll cook for friends. And then, so like his social life got a lot more varied as well, because he wasn't just depending on me to fill those needs.
Did you have to fill in your own or process your own feelings about your husband being with another person?
Yes. Like in the beginning, I went through stages. So at first when I was at the buffet, when I was enjoying my buffet and I was seeing that Marlon wasn't getting any matches, you know, because he was struggling on Tinder. While I was just like, yeah, okay. I was almost hoping he would get it. I was like, oh God, I really hope he starts having fun so that he sees that this is also fun for him. And then eventually he did find the date. And then the thing that struck me about this date was, first I was like, oh my gosh, yay, it's happening. It's really taking off now. And then I think I saw that she was 24 or 23. And then I was like, wait.
Ooh la la.
And I was like, and I just remember being like, my reaction, I was like, you set your Tinder to this age range? Like, is this really it? Is this really what you're looking for? And he was like, yeah, you know, it's just like widened my net. Or I cast the net really wide. And I was like, I don't set my Tinder to that age. You know, and then I was really forced to reckon with it because I'm only ever gonna get older.
Yeah.
You know, if he likes young girls. I also have, is this your type? and he was like, no, it's not my type. It's just, you know, I'm casting my net wide. And I was like, okay. And I remember thinking about all of the things a young girl will have that I don't have, like perky boobs, you know, perky butt, so much energy, great skin. Yeah, and then I was like, oh, you know, I have to be, and then I realized I have to be aware of what I have that a younger girl doesn't. And I have to stop seeing, I caught it right away. I cannot see this as a competition. I cannot see this as a competition because that will put me like in a different, I'll just react differently to everything. And I was like, you know what? I'm super glad you're having this time. I told him, you know, yeah, you could take her here for this is a nice place for drinks and blah, blah, blah. And then he came home from that date and he was like, you know what? And now I understand you because I've had my fun and it was fun, but it doesn't change the fact that I love you and I still want to spend the rest of my life with you. And I was like, yes, now you get it. Now you get it. Yeah. So I think that worked out really well for me. and right now, like what we've realized is that he and I approach this very differently. He doesn't need as much variety and he's also an introvert.
Yeah.
So when he was kind of trying to match my level of activity, it was very unfulfilling for him. And he was seeing it as a competition. So when we accepted that we were different, he was like, oh yeah, Deepa really loves, you know, like new connections and being around people. I can't meet that many new people. Then our relationship really normalized and it settled into like, you know, once in a while he'll meet someone, but he wasn't going at the dating apps hard. And he accepted this about himself and he was just like, you were just different, you know, we're just different. And that's okay.
Yeah. I like that too. I mean, it's also so refreshing to hear as a couple, right? You don't always have to be together. You don't always have to do the same thing.
No, you don't always have to be like the same person and love the same things. It's like, I think this has been a test of how much space, like how much space can our relationship accommodate without drifting apart?
Because what I always hear in relationships is you have to have similar values, similar goals, similar visions. But what I see, you do have that, but you also celebrate the things that make you different from one another.
Absolutely. We have enough shared values and dreams and goals and enough of a shared background. But the things that allow us to be different, we also nurture. So I'm really aware of his like need, for example, for stability and security. He's really like my rock. And then for him, it's just like, oh, Deepa, like my life would be super, you know, kind of like homogenous and maybe a bit boring without you. So I'm his spark. And if we tried too much to become like each other, we wouldn't grow in those areas. Like he wouldn't try new things and I wouldn't be grounded.
Now being middle me, what do you know about yourself and desire and self-concept?
I know that now I know that Now, I used to think that desire was like a wild animal, and if you couldn't tame it, it would tear you apart. But now I know that the things I desire that make me feel alive, that give me pleasure, that my desires are just need room to be heard, to be seen and understood, and then they can fulfill me and help me grow. And when I'm happy and alive and fulfilled, it flows down to everyone else that's in my life. So I accept those things about myself and I embrace them. And I try to balance them with my commitments and my choices. And I think you really can have it all, is what I've learned.
I love it. Okay, Deepa, tell us about the other things going on in your life and where else you can read about your journeys going on still, as you know, all your other adventures.
Yeah, so on my Substack newsletter, Letters by Deepa, that's deepa.substack.com, I write about life, not just as a mother and a wife, but also an adventurer and a girlfriend, and sometimes all at the same time. So that's, I send out, you know, a couple of personal essays twice a month. I also share a lot on my Instagram. I have a very full life and I'm really open about, you know, the time I spend with my husband, with my daughter, with my boyfriend, with my friends. I share a lot on Instagram, and that's Stories by Deepa. And yeah, I'm just kind of like very open about what I do in life, because I think I've gotten to the point where I'm just not ashamed of what I'm doing right now. And you know, and people have told me it's very refreshing to see someone who's really authentic with where they are and what they're doing. So that gives me a lot of fulfillment as well, to keep sharing, writing and sharing about it. I think being free from shame just means that I don't have to hide anything.
Yeah.
I don't have to fit into other people's ideas of me.
Yeah.
And I think at the middle me stage of life, we've realized that we don't have to do that. Or we've realized that we've been doing it for a large amount of our life, or a large portion of our life, and we don't have to do it anymore because we only have so much time left.
Yeah.
And why don't we live the rest of our lives being ourselves and finding out who we are, other than the stories other people have told us to believe about ourselves. So that's what I think being kind of shameless or shame-free is about. Sabi nga nila, hindi childless, child-free, diba? So not shameless, but shame-free.
Love it. Thank you so much, Deepa, for this shame-free conversation. Shame-free and honest conversation, and letting us into your life and your happiness.
Thank you so much, Anna. It's such a pleasure. It's been such a pleasure. Every conversation with you has been such a pleasure.
That was our conversation with Deepa Paul, wife, mother, and soon-to-be author of a memoir called Ask Me How It Works, Everything You Want to Know About My Open Marriage. I don't know about you, but that conversation was so good. So much good stuff about long-term intimacy and desire, alternative narratives about men as life partners and lovers, and renaming our desire and calling it the joy of being shame-free. I love it. I really, really do. I hope you did too. And I hope that you'll continue to think of Middle Me as your safe space where you can get honest answers to your questions about your sexuality, your body, your money after 40. I'm Anna P. Santos. You can find Middle Me wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Hit that subscribe button and drop a comment or two. But you know, actually, dropping a 5-star review would be even better. Till our next episode.